welcome to our brand new podcast, Looking After the NHS, with me, Catherine Dale, and my wonderful NHS colleague, Io Chico Michael. We're aiming for this podcast to be heartwarming, heartfelt, and hopefully a heartening series about a very serious and pressing issue. How do we make the NHS even better? So just so that you know, we love the NHS. We're incredibly proud to work for it. But let's face it, it's not perfect. Well, not yet.
Yet.
In fact, to be honest, we're quite grateful or we would be out of a job. So that's because we work in the really exciting area of change, transformation, innovation and improvement of health and care, which is nearly as hard to say quickly as it is a challenge to do. But it's not a challenge because the NHS is backward or archaic or stuck in its ways, but because getting things wrong could come at a terrible cost. That doesn't mean we can't try to make things better. So this podcast is about that possibility. We are going to be speaking to experts, leaders, and people with real life practical experience of improving health and care services and seeing what we can learn from one another about making the NHS even better. So first up, in honour of Stress Awareness Week, we'd like to talk about the thing that really makes the NHS go round, our staff. Io, you've got some stats for us.
Indeed. Let's start from the latest NHS staff survey. We all know that NHS is the biggest employer in Europe with about 1.3 million staff. Mm. And just over half of that are clinical. About 52% are clinical.
48% are not clinical.
Just like you and I.
That's incredible. I didn't know there was that many. I thought it was way... the vast majority of people were clinical.
And 77% are women.
77%. Oh, I kind of knew that. I kind of knew that it was an employer that had a vast majority of women.
Because of Stress Awareness Week, I've got some stats relating to that. I've also got some startling stats relating to COVID-19. 44% said they had felt unwell as a result of work-related stress. 34% worked on a COVID ward. 18.5% were redeployed because of COVID. 10% had to shield. 55% admitted to having had to work on paid hours.
Everybody recognises that COVID would have has put a lot of pressure on the system, but it's very stark to see the kind of impact. People having to change jobs, people being directly working with people with COVID. Mm-hmm. 44% saying that they were unwell because of work-related stress. That's enormous.
Yeah.
That's enormous.
And 10% had to shield.
Yeah.
So yeah. Imagine having 10% away from an already stretched workforce.
Absolutely. I was particularly surprised by the stat about only 52% of the employees in the NHS being clinical staff. Because whenever we think of the NHS, even we who work in it, we primarily think of people in clinical roles. Mm-hmm. And even when they were doing the clapping for the NHS staff, I sort of felt like I was clapping the NHS rather than being clapped myself.
Yes.
I think a lot of people had that feeling anyway. But also it's really reminded me some of the talk about the NHS and people who work in it, particularly frontline staff recently, has really reminded me of a conversation I once had with a paramedic who really objected to the fact that NHS staff were considered heroes because she felt that that put unrealistic expectations on people. They're not heroes, they're human beings who are facing really challenging situations. Some of the things that they do are obviously recognised by all of us as heroic and life-saving, but it was really interesting that she found the concept of being thought of as a hero actually put more pressure on her and made life more difficult. And I think it's that concept that was behind the Only Human campaign that we worked on with a number of organisations in South London during COVID. So we had been doing some work about catheter care, and we couldn't go onto the wards as planned because of COVID. But we had these teams of people with this expertise, and we wondered how we might use their time and their knowledge to help people in the NHS. Only Human is based on nudge theory. We've realised that we do have these biases, these ways of behaving that are really predictable and that can be tapped into to encourage us to do the right thing. One of the nudges that is really core to this idea is that if they find it more difficult to check in, to notice themselves how they're doing, then they might find it easier to check in on one another. I really struggle to explain this project concisely, which is a good moment to bring in today's guest, Áine Dolan, who was involved in implementing this Only Human campaign in King's College Hospital. Áine, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to join you. I'm currently actually the Deputy Chief People Officer at Maidstone Tunbridge Wells Acute Trust, and I started my NHS career in King's about 10 weeks before COVID.
Wow.
So it's a really interesting time to join. By background, I'm an organisational development practitioner, which means I look after the development of organisations and the people in them. And part of what we did to support our staff in King's during this extraordinary time was to jump on bringing Only Human into our organisation.
Fantastic. So what was it and what did it mean for the staff in King's? Like you said, it was part of the things you were doing. This wasn't the only thing. But tell us some more about what that meant.
I think what was extraordinary about going into COVID was we kind of knew what was going to happen. We were looking around the world, we could see what was happening in other countries. And before we went into lockdown, we started having conversations with our colleagues. We're really lucky at King's to be opposite the South London and Maudsley NHS Trust. So we started talking to our psychology and psychiatry colleagues about what we could do to help support our staff through what we knew would be a really difficult period. And we developed with them what is a stepped care model, which starts with helping people to develop really good self-care practices for themselves, but also for each other. And the second step of that stepped care was how do we look after each other? So Only Human really strongly played into those two elements of a model that we had designed, which was based on what we knew from SARS learnings and from Ebola learning as well. So right. We knew that that this would be really difficult, but actually if we could help staff to build in really good practices up front, that we could help to ameliorate and prevent what could be more serious damage to them long term emotionally and mentally.
That's amazing. And yeah, the Only Human sort of concept came about from the importance of the kind of natural instinct of people who work in the NHS to care about other people before we care about ourselves. And the counterpoint to that is that whenever you go on a plane, you're always told you need to put the mask on yourself before you put the mask on the small child. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way we behave most of the time, even if we're not clinical.
Absolutely. And we talked about that quite a lot, that kind of it was a heroism, I think. And I think we actually see those heroics every day, even though health and social care professionals don't want to admit to that. And that I get that. We did actually say that it is the same as putting your oxygen mask on first. But I think that's quite difficult to do in the moment. And especially if you're not primed to do that. And I think what the Only Human campaign allowed us to do was through Nudge to prime people to self-scan, to think about how they were doing. But more importantly, because we learned this is what health and social care professionals do, is they could see it in each other.
Yeah.
And it was that reaching out to each other. Are you okay? You're not your usual self. That gave people permission not to be okay. And we were saying it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
But Only Human gave us a language to be able to do that in more readily. And that kind of priming
Absolutely.
Was really important.
Yeah. I think we've experienced that in our team as well, haven't we?
Yes.
Io, that there's been times when we've looked out for each other in the team. And that's been so important, even when we've only been meeting virtually, that just noticing someone doesn't quite seem themselves and just checking in with each other to make sure they're okay. And me as the leader of the team, I found it so helpful that other people in the team were looking after each other, because otherwise there becomes so much of a burden of responsibility on some key people. So the kind of like a network approach to looking after one another is, I think, so important.
I think it's really important. And I think, so I've obviously moved trust, and but I wanted to bring Only Human with me, because one of the things that we learned through the surges of COVID last year was that well-being is not a deliverable. You can't do well-being to people, and you can't make them well. Well-being is an outcome, and it's an outcome of a lot of different things. It's an outcome of our compassionate relationships with each other. It's an outcome of good management and leadership practice and good organisational policies and the way they're implemented. So Only Human, actually, if Only Human becomes a cycle that you run in your organisation, what we think we're going to do is help to build a culture of well-being within the organisation that can be sustained. And that's why I wanted to bring Only Human with me, because the Only Human prompts, how do you manage uncertainty? How do you build in good management practice, checking in with each other, checking out with each other at the end of the day, recharging, creating permission to do that during the day, stepping away from the ward area. This is about an ongoing culture of well-being. And ultimately, this is how we keep our staff in work. It's how we retain them within the NHS. So for me, Only Human is a really important foundation stone, actually, in creating a different culture.
There is quite a caring nature to people in the NHS. And we've also been looking at some stats, and 77% of employees in the NHS are women. Do we think those things are interrelated?
Yeah, I think you can't unrelate them, I think. And partly is that because we bring our whole selves to work. So we have, you know, the NHS is staffed by human beings, and that caring nature is brought in. I think there is probably there are gender issues. And it's not to say that male colleagues don't have that, but it may be that I think the NHS attracts people with a very caring nature and altruism. And therefore it's much more difficult to leave when you know that there's still work that has to be done at the end of the day, and to be able to let that go and not check in and see how things are happening back on site. So it means that people don't get that recharge, that unwind that they need to. And I think that's probably actually a bit of business as usual for staff in the NHS. I think what COVID did was to really amplify that, because we were feeling very anxious societally, and a lot seemed to be hanging on the NHS. There were murals on the wall, there was the clapping and the pan banging. And it seemed that, you know, we were right there out at the front, and that created a lot of pressure for people.
Absolutely. I've never known people who work in the NHS to be so willing to talk about how they were feeling until the pandemic. I still do work where we ask patients about their experience, and we ask staff about their experience of services. But what staff have tended to do in the past is talk about what they interpret patients' experiences to be, which is not the same as how does this feel for me. And I've felt that through COVID, people have become a lot more willing to talk about the real emotional difficulties that healthcare kind of is associated with. So I suppose my question is stress an inevitability of working in healthcare, particularly on the front line?
I think there are very pressured jobs within the healthcare service when you have very poorly people and people that are in pain, or you know you're going to deliver bad news to. And I think that inherently carries a degree of stress with it, you know, no matter how strong you are or emotionally resilient. I think it's how people feel supported in that and how they can process and deal with that in a way that is a natural and very human way to do that. So I think there can be a pathologizing, and I think that's perhaps what happened at the beginning of COVID. It was almost a pathologizing of people's response to a very stressful situation, and actually there is normal adjustment that needs to be made, and that is perfectly normal. It's very normal to be very upset when you've had to deliver bad news, maybe. Yeah. But actually what only human allowed was that vulnerability to be a normal thing, and that sharing of stressful experiences to be a normal thing. And then of course sometimes it's not normal, and sometimes people do need to seek help, but actually the first line of defense, if you like, is to create a culture and a team spirit where you can talk about those things that are stressful and normalize them.
A big part of the Only Human campaign that really speaks to me is the part that allows us to be ourselves, allows us to normalize talking about the facade of I'm okay all the time, because human beings are not designed to be okay all the time. How did you push past the issue when people refer back to their training as a clinician to keep calm and carry on, to be able to deliver all the time? How did Only Human work with that or around that?
So we promoted and launched Only Human into the trust in a number of different ways when I was in King's, and we're doing that similarly in Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells. So we did what we called kind of broadcast comms. So we had messaging that went out. It went out from the chief exec, from other executives. We promoted it through lots of our internal comms channels. We had merchandise. We had and still have wellbeing hubs that are staffed with wellbeing staff who knew about Only Human and could talk about it and promote it. And that is really important, that being able to access the information. But I think crucially, it's about building the practice into the organisation as well. And during the second surge, when we talked to colleagues in the organisation about what they needed now, things were different. What do you need now? They said it's much more difficult to leave our areas for wellbeing support. Can you come in to our areas? Mm-hmm. So we kind of invigorated a cadre of wellbeing champions that we shared our information with and who could bring it right into their teams. But we also trained what we called wellbeing partners. And these partners had all of the materials for Only Human. They had the merchandising, and those partners worked with ward managers, matrons, doctors. They worked with our facilities teams, because it's not all just about the clinicians. Our hostess staff, our cleaning staff were all working in COVID areas. They were all supporting each other. We still had, you know, A&E was still open. So this was about all of our staff. It wasn't just about our clinical staff. And that was really important as well. We brought the practice in. So we would do things like join shift changes and talk about checking in. What does checking in mean? How do you do it? And we would support people to adopt the behaviours, essentially. And we cycled that through. So we'd run a cycle last summer, which was when we brought Only Human in. Then again, during the second surge, they're running it again now. So it's about cycling and keep repeating within the organisation as well, I think.
We did a lot of checking in as well in yeah. our team, didn't we? I think the issue of trust is really important in checking in. So I'm able to check into my team because we've built that trust, that network.
Did people trust each other to be vulnerable in front of each other?
Yeah, I think they did, increasingly so. And I know certainly for my own team, I had some of my team who were clinically extremely vulnerable, and they were shielding. They were still part of my team and they were still working. And we checked in every day, quick 10 minutes. And that became increasingly important for people the longer they were shielding and potentially isolated. But Only Human applied to them as well, because they were still living in an uncertain environment. They were still working in quite an isolated way and needing to work differently to be in contact with people. So I think it's very easy to, you know, for it all to be about the kind of the clinical frontline. Mm. But the clinical frontline is supported by a very large team of not clinical frontline staff. And it's just important that they are supported in the same way as we do the clinical frontline.
You know, there's no denying this is an important and significant thing to do, but is it more than just making people feel better? Is there a real, is there evidence that this makes a significant difference from sort of a business case point of view in the NHS?
Yes. and this is where, it's the slightly more, it's the bit that's maybe not the the cuddly bit. And that is, you know, we know from what's in the media, there are resourcing issues for the NHS and for certain professions within the NHS as well. And I think what's important about Only Human is it is about helping staff to stay in work. It's about creating an environment that they feel well in and they feel healthy in and they want to stay in. I think that's really important. But also on the kind of the patient outcome and quality patient care side, you know, if you look at the research that Professor Michael West has done, it's very clear that there is a correlation between good patient outcomes and well staff, and good patient outcomes and cultures of compassion and kindness. So we know that how staff feel and how they are does have an impact on patient outcomes and patient experience. So this isn't Only Human isn't just about being nice to staff. That is absolutely important and should be a top priority, but it is also about how this also impacts our patients. And I think that's important to remember.
Absolutely, because that's what's motivating everybody always working in the NHS. It's not just about having a pleasant work environment, it's about contributing to something that is about health and care for people. That's, even if you're not in a frontline clinical role, that's still a big part of what motivates all of us, I think. And so building that kind of understanding, that connection there, I think is really powerful. Thank you.
Definitely agree with you.
And the better I feel physically and mentally, the better I am in the work that I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're all only human.
Only human.
We are all only human.
I'd really like to wrap this up with everyone's best ideas to create a less stressed NHS workforce.
I'd wish for the future that staff across the NHS, wherever they're working, can show up at work and just be themselves.
Brilliant.
My wish for the NHS is that we're able to have a psychologically safe space in every NHS organisation to enable staff to trust one another and be able to carry out all these wonderful things that we've talked about, being only human.
It's so interesting to hear what we've been talking about today, and we are still quite inevitably really emphasizing the role of staff. I still think we have an overemphasis on our role as healthcare professionals to do everything, to rescue everyone, to be in charge of everything, to make it all. And actually, sometimes that's not what people want or need. And maybe if we were better at consulting, having conversations, really working in partnership with patients, we would take some of the stress off of ourselves.
Yep. Yes, I copy that. That is deep.
Thank you so much for joining us, Anya. It's been so great to have you contributing to our very first podcast and have your wisdom and insights from your work. Really wish you all the best with continuing to encourage a really healthy workplace in all the places that you're working. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That was our first ever Looking After the NHS. We hope that it's left you feeling more energised and more positive, and ideally wanting to hear more from us. We'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts or ideas or comments on anything we've discussed today, please send them to hin.coms@nhs.net. And for any more information on any of the projects discussed in today's episode, please head to our website, healthinnovationnetwork.com.